Ever start a new supplement and wonder, is this really working? You're not alone. Most supplements aren't easily absorbed, which means your body might not be getting the nutrients it needs. Symbiotica takes a different approach, with formulas designed for maximum absorption. Favorites, like their liposomal vitamin C, support a strong immune system and boost natural collagen production. And their newest standout, liquid colostrum, is essential for a healthy gut, packed with nutrients that soothe and restore the gut lining. Symbiotica's clean, bioavailable supplements help your body actually use what you take, delivering real results. And with a monthly subscription, it's easy to stay consistent. Symbiotica makes wellness simple. Ready to feel the difference? Go to Symbiotica.com and use code START for 20% off. That's Symbiotica.com, code START.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And a couple of butt kickings can make one a little bit philosophical. And these last two games have certainly made me feel that way, D. And I've been watching the last few games, right? And the rewatches are always helpful, especially in the ones where you're super happy or super upset, right? Because it helps clarify some things. And I think the Lakers have a fairly important game tonight against Miami. It's not the end of the season or anything like that if they don't win, of course, but they've lost three straight. Looks like Dorian Finney-Smith is doubtful tonight for personal reasons, but Miami kicked the Lakers' butts last time they played too. That was one of the games that inspired some philosophical reflection earlier in the season. And in many ways, Miami, I view as both a sister team to the Lakers and the exact opposite. They're run by the guy who raised a lot of us OG Laker fans in Pat Riley. In Miami and LA have some similarities, right, in terms of climate and just kind of the vibes of the city. I think it's the most similar city to LA, at least on the East Coast. But from a basketball perspective, I would argue that in some ways they're about as opposite as you can get. Miami is notoriously not built around high draft picks. The only top 10 guy they have on their roster is a very old Kevin Love. The Lakers, meanwhile, have LeBron and AD as two former number one guys. Jackson, Cam, Rui. I may be forgetting somebody, but you know, a lot of lottery picks on the team. But Miami very much relies on playing basketball correctly, right? Your shell drill, your shell offense, 5-on-0 offense, 5-on-0 defense, where you're supposed to rotate here, you're supposed to pass here, you're supposed to do this when that happens. And so they understand the manual of basketball, and they run it back and they run it as well as anybody in the league. This is exactly what I see the Lakers struggling with. I'm making a video on the team switching, and in rewatching these games, the switching, everything we've we've talked about with the switching and the reasons not to do it as much, totally on point. But I feel like there's a bigger problem in which if they were running a different defense, it would manifest a different way, where there's just a lack of engagement from play to play that like other teams just play correctly way more often than the Lakers do. And so Miami, we were talking right before we started here, just gave the Clippers a push. They've been playing well without Jimmy Butler. They didn't have Bam the other night as well. And how do you do that, D? It's not with guys. It's not with the Jimmys and Joes. Like, you got to be good enough, right? But it's about being able to execute. And so this has been a problem for the Lakers for several years. I've got some theories on it and whatnot, but just more than anything else, D, that's kind of what's been on my mind these last couple of days is like, why can't the Lakers execute consistently?
Well, honestly, I think it starts with their stars. Like, this is the thing that if there's something that LeBron and AD were great at 5 years ago and they're not as good as it now, it's play-to-play motor and play-to-play sort of engagement. I was watching clips of the Celtics, not actually watching clips, I was watching the game between the Celtics and the Pelicans. This was the other night. It was a very close game, back and forth. I was hoping the Pels would steal one. They did not, but I was watching it through the Pelicans feed. And so it's very interesting to hear other teams opine about whatever, right? Because they have their own outsider perspective. And one of the things that the Pelicans feed was saying was, this looks like Boston is going through that malaise of being like a former champion and like they just won it and like random night in January and they don't necessarily have their A game. Sometimes I feel like that with LeBron and AD, and they won a championship 4.5 years ago. In that there are times where on a night-to-night basis, they don't have that verve, that kick, that fire. And they turn it on and off within a single game. I've seen LeBron be supernova for a 7-minute stretch. And then in that same game, I've seen him totally not move from a low man rotation or watch a rebound sort of kick in a certain direction. And one of the things that I think is that in reminiscing about the 2020 championship team, I think LeBron and AD led the way more than we acknowledge in terms of play-to-play effort. And the role players had enough of that independently of LeBron and AD, where it showed up on many nights, even when LeBron and AD didn't have it. But those nights were fewer and further between than what this current group has. And I don't know, like, maybe it's too simple for me to say that LeBron and AD lead the way. And when their effort is revving high, the rest of the team follows. And when their effort level dips, they don't. But to me, that's one of the driving factors of why on a night-to-night basis, like the team doesn't always do the right thing. Because I think some of that is like motor driven and engagement driven. Like when you talk about engagement, I think about like your mental, like, how can I be in it enough? And part of me feels like this group is both low on that, and LeBron and AD don't always inspire that in their teammates based off of their own play.
That's certainly part of it. I think that there are other parts of it, though, that we don't talk about quite as much. First off, just through the star type of lens, one of the reasons why a team like Miami is so good from an execution standpoint is they have to be. Stars, if you've ever played even high school ball, right? Almost every team's got one guy that's really good.
Yeah.
And relative to the other players on the court, if you're close to matched up. And there are going to be plays where the kid does everything correctly and the way more talented player gets the bucket, even though the way more talented player made the wrong choice. Anthony Davis is a great example of this, of somebody who, if you're freezing the moment in time and being like, should you drive left? Should you drive right? Should you do this or that? He makes the wrong quote unquote choice more often than a lot of players do, but he's so good that a shot that's a bad shot for most players is a good shot for him. But there is a ceiling to that too, especially as players get older, where I don't lay this quite at the feet of LeBron and AD in the same way that like the Lakers being organized, for example, Miami's very likely to blitz us tonight. If they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off, running away from the blitz and not really sure what to do when they double, like that's a big thing for me specific tonight, because we're talking very big picture, general. Look for that tonight. Can we beat their blitzes? When they send a second player to the ball, can we get an open shot out of that? Those are the types of things that I'm talking about that, yeah, maybe it's effort and concentration related, but there are so many plays where we're like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap, you know, when and not ready for what's happening.
So one of the tangents or one of the limbs of the tree I was talking about with AD and LeBron is the exact point that you're making here, which I firmly believe in. That idea of like talent and how far talent will take you and the ability to do things other players can't, I think that that is ever present in both LeBron and AD based off of their histories as players. One of the interesting things about LeBron, specifically to me, is that he has always been an engine of offense based off of his own individual ability and how well he can orchestrate the players on the court in order to get to things a certain way. LeBron can function within a system, and I think that he does that relatively well, but he often has an ability and a penchant to break systems as well and basically just say, we're going to do this because this is what I see. And the idea that you were talking about with AD, those are instincts. So it's not about choices, right? He has the ball at the elbow. And this is why AD has some confounding turnovers as well. It's like he spins into a player and you're like,
doesn't see the second guy. Yeah.
What were you looking at there? And the fact is he wasn't looking at that. If he was looking at that, he wouldn't have spun right into the dude. It's like he's feeling the game and he's feeling it within the context of what makes sense to his body to move in that moment.
I love that you made the distinction between LeBron and AD in this respect, because I think that it hits two separate points that are both true. Let's take a break, come back, and talk about that. So my question, D, is with LeBron, let's start there, because I think the problems are different than playing through AD, is when LeBron dribbles himself into a post-up or when we post him up, why is nothing happening off of that? Or like, why are we just getting the first bits of that? You know what I'm saying? Like, there have been so many possessions throughout the year where everybody's just standing and watching. I watch other teams and they're running organized action off of that. Okay, we're posting up with this guy. This guy's going to set a screen. This guy's going to, but there is organization around them that like laying this at the feet of the stars is, and I'm sorry to put it that way, D. I know that's not your intent, but like they're not the headline of this for me, because it's like, what's LeBron supposed to do? He's got the ball and he's in the post. Why aren't the other four guys doing anything, and why has it lasted that long?
No, see, and this is why it's not just one thing. And this is why, even though I lead with the star stuff to me is more, when you talked about Miami, I'm thinking more about the, like, you got to go.
The mentality. Yeah, that's fair.
Like the verve, we got to execute this and that engagement. When you talk about engagement, I'm talking about like that in the moment, hyper-focused. What you're talking about is also related to Miami in that they are a super organized team. And I think the Lakers are so I'm going to compare this to running. I run, and I run, a lot of times I'll run what they call like an out and back, right? Especially when I'm in a place I've never been in before. So I go on vacation, I'm somewhere random, I have no idea where I am. And so what I do is I'm going to run 3 miles today. I run a mile and a half in one direction, and then I turn right back around and I run a mile and a half back, and boom, there's my 3 miles. When I run at home, where I live, I don't run out and backs too often. I run in circles and I run a route and I'll run like a giant square. And it's just like, oh, I'll cut down this street. I'll go up this other street. I'll cut this way. And because I know how to make my way home. Now, to land this plane here, hopefully I can. The Lakers are very good at running to a destination and then essentially turning around and coming back. So they get to a point in the play where they're just like, aha, I've done it. I've gotten to where I'm supposed to go.
Job's finished.
But they don't make their way home very often in the second and third. And when I say make my way home, it's that second and third action. It's just like, hey, we got to our mile and a half here. Now, how are you going to get your mile and a half way home? And a lot of times it's like, it's on the player who has the ball at that point to run that extra mile and a half because the rest of the players don't know their way home. And that can happen to me when you have a new coach. That said, we're too far into the season for that to not be as refined as I would like. Hopefully that made sense.
It did. And one of the ideas of like a player being familiar with their position and how to get home is how often in their life have they played that spot and that role on a team? One of the downsides to having the six or however many top 10 picks that the Lakers have on the roster is it puts a couple of guys in positions where it's like, all right, I'm standing in the corner as my main job now. Cam has gone through this transition. Rui, of course, right? Where they are not as familiar with being a satellite, with being a supporting player because they've been at the center of their team. And now this is true of a lot of NBA players for sure. And at every point, every NBA player has been the star of their team, a lot of times all the way through college. But there are also other players, many of whom are of the second round and undrafted type of mold that Miami really builds around. Even their star that up until recently they've been built around was a 30th pick in the draft that barely played at all his first year or two and like grinded until he became a star. And so that's their whole type of identity. But if you're not used to playing a certain type of position, this is one of the advantages Max has, I would say, as his role is like, he's been an ancillary guy, even at Michigan State. He wasn't their main ball handler. He wasn't their main ball handler like a Cam was. He wasn't their, oh, we're going to feature you on offense like a guy like Rui had been. And so that to me, I think plays a part of it is that not everybody is as familiar with the roles that they're playing.
Well, I would say this too. It's just like, remember one of our first discussions we had about DFS after like the first or second game that he had played is I saw him make a pass and go to relocate. And then he like was standing right next to a teammate.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he looked uncertain. He did the right thing.
He was correct. It was the rest of the, yeah.
He did the right thing. But when he found himself standing right next to someone, you could tell the look on his face. Like, did I do this right?
Well, yeah, and you're new, right? You're in a new work environment. Do we do it differently around here type of thing?
Right, exactly. But he did do it, right? It was the rest of the crew that isn't quite where he is in terms of, is this really how we do it? And maybe it's not fast the way that we do it here, even if what's right or what's wrong. And I say all that to say that this team is not as far along as what I would want it to be in terms of the second and third stuff that they're doing offensively. I've said this a bunch. Like, I love it, the initial play design of a lot of the stuff that Redick does. I think he's very good at getting you to that mile and a half, right? Mm-hmm. The building out the rest of the route home is not a thing that I think has happened. And I don't know what you attribute that to. And maybe people inside the organization would like disagree with that sentiment. But when I watch the team, I'm not seeing it.
So that was one of the things I was actually encouraged by in the last game was their level of drive and kick play. But what you're talking about is the after the initial play design. And even then, like, yeah, that's a whole other topic. I think it's okay. The initial play design, it doesn't always match kind of what the defense is doing. But nonetheless, a lot of times it's what happens after the initial minor advantage is created. So it's not enough to like take the shot right there. But if you swing it or if you shot fake, rip through, if you make the right choice to drive left, drive right on all of those, you can extend that advantage in ways where I watch teams around the league and they're much better at it than we are.
They are. I would also say that this goes back to that idea of LeBron and AD being able to break the rules pretty much their entire lives and not only get away with it, but be supreme. Like, they do more than get away with it. They are all NBA level players playing however the hell they want to play. And building structure around that can be tricky. So I remember Lakers have always been a post-heavy team under LeBron and AD. And I remember it was Frank's first year, Frank Vogel. It was his first year, maybe his second year, and the Lakers were posting, And you and I were having discussions about, like, why is everyone just standing around? I don't get it. And I remember hearing AD talk about how sometimes it's helpful for him to know that this is where everyone is going to be. And when I'm reading the situation, like, I can see it. And I was just like, that's an interesting perspective as an outsider, because I'm not Anthony Davis. I'm not as good as him. I'm not turning and facing and then pivoting and then reverse pivoting. And then suddenly I'm in traffic and wait, why did this guy cut right now? Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be over there. That's where he was when I started this action. And it was not necessarily a light bulb moment for me, but it was an interesting perspective that, like, I just wasn't thinking that way. And then under Darvin, they started to do all of this cutting that they were doing, and guys were getting layups. And I was just like, oh, that's interesting. And even in Frank's third year, remember how they were like, instead of putting the second big in the dunker spot, they were putting the second big at the elbow,
Mm-hmm.
at the opposite elbow. And then it was Dwight a lot of times, mm-hmm. and he was setting flare screens, and then he was like cutting.
That's the right stuff from that's there. Basketball.
Right. And so, and then Darvin was doing that a fair amount last season with Vando, and that's how Vando was getting a lot of cuts. Even D'Lo was running these same actions as Vando was running, the totally different types of players, but it was very similar cuts. It was black, it was back screens and flare screens and then cuts right after that. And I think both things can work in terms of, like, what I was talking about, what Frank Vogel was doing versus what they started to do last year under Darvin and what Frank did by his third year. But I can tell you that the standing around thing, you're much more reliant then on your stars to basically just beat their dude or make the shot. As their stars have aged, it's 5 years later now from when the Lakers won their championship, or 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be as good at that. They're just not.
Right. And so there needs to be infrastructure around them, and using system and player movement and ball movement and organization to where just clearing out a side for them to go cook is like the fact that, and again, they started doing that. They knew that Kidd was going to double the post. At the very least, they put in the time in on the game plan. And so they were relocating from the top and trying to do that. But it was like, they barely done that at all this year. And whereas Dallas has been doubling and rotating and does it very seriously, they've been doing that for years. So I suppose the argument that I'm making is that the time is now to get good at the organized stuff. Like, we should be further than we are. Let's take a break here. Talk about how do we get from where we are to hopefully where we want to be. So I pose that question to you, D, is how do you get an environment that's been very used to, like, hey, these two guys just be awesome and we're going to go stand over here and watch you do it, to a level of organization and a level of being able to create baskets out of more than just individual ability?
I mean, you tell me. You've coached. It sounds jokey, but I'm being serious, right? Because there clearly needs to be an investment in time, mm-hmm. and do we actually believe in this, right? I also think there is a, what are the players' natural inclinations, and is it natural for them to do this or is it not?
Yeah.
And if it's not natural, then you need to drill it. And if it is natural, then you need to let them do the thing that makes sense mm-hmm. to them as well. When D'Lo started to do all of those cuts and screens and all this stuff, I was just like, he looks very comfortable doing this. And to a certain extent, he looked a bit unleashed. Mm-hmm. It was very similar to Vando. You could tell that as a guy who has not been guarded a fair amount in his life, it made sense for him to start to do that stuff rather than to just stand in the weak side corner and take uncontested threes that he was not making. So I kick this idea to you because a part of me feels like the Lakers like those dudes standing in the corner because they think they're capable of making those shots. They like those guys stationed the way that they are. But a part of me is just like, but you have to play more towards just trying to get that shot, because if you can't actually make the passes that get that shot open, then you're going to need LeBron or AD to, like, do something not fantastic, but, you know, score
right
every single time. And that's hard.
And this is an area where Rui provides tremendous value, that ability to score on all three levels out of this exact scenario where they're used the way that my understanding of the principles is rules for corners are generally if the ball handler is going toward you, you hold your spot. And if the ball handler is dribbling away from you, you lift. And so that is something that is that combined with the ability to back cut is sort of the three things you need your shooter to be able to do it, your scorer to be able to do. Rui's not the best like lateral shooter, but if he gets his feet under him, he can knock it down. And in terms of his ability to catch and shoot, score off of that racket, you know, get all the way to the rim if they attack that hard, he's of great value. But what you were talking about earlier, that play with Dorian Finney-Smith where he relocated correctly to the corner, and I don't know if you remember who he ran into exactly, but
he ran into Dalton.
Okay.
He was standing very close to Dalton. They were both below the break.
And do you know who was next to Dalton?
No one was next to Dalton. Dalton's in the corner.
Okay, so that's Dalton's mistake.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And so that's the type of thing that there needs to be a level of accountability in film sessions. If you're not going to practice a ton, this is the type of thing where all of the players know these principles in a lot of ways. It's just a matter of like, we are going to do this on, you know, if we're on the weak side and we've got a cluster of four guys, if nothing else, just to create a little bit of space for somebody, you can't have four players on one side of the court all kind of occupying the same space. Someone, for God's sake, go set a pin screen. You know, somebody relocate, get some motion, put some challenge on the defense. And that, to me, in an environment where they're not going to practice a ton, the film sessions become super important. And then also just having players whose natural inclination is to be a role player, right? Is to make these type of plays that Gabe is the same way in this respect. It always cracks me up when a player comes from another environment and they get here and they start running into our guys because our guys are busy watching TV as the play is going on. And so, yeah, that's just been on my mind, man, that the amount that they're watching TV as they're playing the game, you could translate this to the defensive glass as well, right? Where all of these, I swear to you, D, watch these plays where we're giving up these offensive rebounds. They're like, they're so late to react to everything because there's just like a lack of engagement that where the other team is mentally a step ahead.
Yeah. And this is where my sense of like, what are your instincts as an individual player and how they kick in? The point that you made in yesterday's pod about how, whether or not it's deliberate or not, the players that the front office has chosen to target and acquire, even DFS is like this, honestly. Their inclination is not to go get the ball on a defensive rebound. Like there are certain players where it's just like their instinct is to go rebound. A great example of this to me as guards were both Jason Kidd and Rondo. Rondo was a great out of area rebounder, and so was Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd saw the ball in the air and he was moving towards it. It was very natural for him. I don't know a player on the roster right now outside of maybe Vando where that is really true on the defensive glass. AD is a great rebounder, don't get me wrong. He's also a guy that at this stage of his career, and he's still in his prime, so I don't want to like overplay this concept, but it's like the ask on AD is pretty heavy, and he's been at the top of the league of rebounding for the last like two or three seasons, so I know he's good at rebounding. But the whole like, I'm going to run way over there to go get the ball, he doesn't do that as much as he used to.
Rebounding is such a blind spot for this team in its team building over the last several years that not only is it something where they haven't really gotten a lot of guys whose instinct is to go get the ball, they've gotten a lot of guys who are bad positional rebounders. And when you have a collection of players who are bad at it, we had Torian Prince last year, right? And is Jackson Hayes a good defensive rebounder for his position?
He is not.
Right? Is DFS? No, he's not. Right? Gabe? I know these are all like, you don't think about, oh, rebounding from the guard spot, but you have to. It's part of the whole puzzle. And so, yeah, like there's part of the, hey, how do the Lakers fix this is with different players. And then
yes,
the question before that is, do the Lakers want to fix this? Which is a whole nother, series of pods, but yeah.
The thing is, Pete, is like, if you're looking at your guards to be the difference makers on the glass, you're doing it wrong. I don't mean to sound all 1982 here, like I'm Dean Smith or something, but it's just like, rebounding really is the job of your forwards and centers. Your forwards do need to be able to rebound, Pete.
You're right. You're right. We also have to pick a lane. We cannot switch and have that philosophy. You can't play 1982 basketball and switch. You know what I'm saying? So I agree with your point. You want big ass dudes around the basket, go get the ball, right? Then you play two bigs. If you want to play that way, you don't switch. You play more traditional type of basketball. But if we're going to do all this switching, it is absolutely essential that someone drops down when big ass Steven Adams has his arm in Max Christie's back. Yeah. Someone drops down and freaking jumps and taps the ball away. It is essential. Yes.
This is why I've been harping on this idea. The only players who look like they've switched a ton in their life when they play, Max looks like he's done it. But it's really LeBron and DFS. They're the guys who are actually like kind of flying in and tipping the ball away when they see that it's just like, no, that's actually a really big dude right there.
Yep.
And if I actually don't tip it right now, then he's just going to gobble the ball up and get a layup or get fouled. And so LeBron does this way more when he's engaged, but even when he's just like, I see it, I'm just going to go do this right now. And I don't mean to skewer Rui here by any means, but Rui just doesn't have a feel for rebounding in this same way. Sometimes he tips the ball away when he's like the only guy around. And other times he's really like battling the dude for a rebound and it's like his own teammate.
That's part of the struggle with Rui, and like he's been trying. You know,
yes.
And there are sometimes it's are better than others, but it hasn't been a total like, oh, there goes Rui loafing again. It's not that.
No, he's not natural. This isn't a natural thing for him. And that's the biggest difference between watching someone like Rui do this job and DFS do this job, not necessarily to rebounding, but just overall role. DFS clearly has been like, I made my, talking about coming out of the mud and sort of having to play a very specific way in order to make your career. That's DFS's story. And he's been doing this for a very long time. And it stands out that he's been doing this for a very long time. And so there is a natural inclination for him to like choose that right path that you were talking about earlier, when you're like drive left or drive right, when you freeze the tape, there's probably a handful of possessions I can count where DFS saved a play or made a difference within a play simply through effort and in the snap decision of where do I go? Where do I move right now? I have to choose right now. And if I choose wrong, then the other team gets the ball. But if I choose right, I have a chance. And I've seen him maybe save 3 or 4 plays that way. There was a turnover 2 nights ago or 3 nights ago where it was legit a turnover. The ball is going out of bounds and DFS just ran his ass to the sideline and tipped it and got in the guy's way. And then the other team hit the ball and suddenly it's the Lakers' ball again. And it's just like he literally had a fraction of an instant to say, where do I go right now? Do I start to jog back or do I go chase the damn ball right now? And he chooses right more often than not in those instances. And there's a reason why that reflects in like box score numbers, like not individual stats, but plus minus and things like that, right? And so one of the things that I'm looking for in this evaluation period that we've been talking about for like a week and a half now is striking the right balance between, do we have enough of those guys on the team? I don't think we do. Versus if you have too many of those dudes.
We already can't score. You,
yeah. Like, do you have enough of all of the other stuff that actually like gets you to the place where functionally we have a high enough floor for lineups to work? Because you can't build lineups of 4 DFSs and LeBron this stage of his career.
And regardless of what they do, there has to be more of a manipulation of the system. There have to be more system buckets. And there are a lot available because we don't get a whole ton of them, right? Where they're scoring not just off of individual talent. So that to me is the story. And Miami is a great archetype to look toward of playing basketball correctly and how to do that on a possession-to-possession basis. So, all right. This has been a fun one. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about how it went. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One. Miss it. Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.